Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If we're going to make everyone healthy again with peptides, then how are we going to make Americans that are Ozempic healthy?
It's a good question. If there is double the risk of becoming depressed when you're taking GLP-1s like semaglutide, and at this point, but how many Americans have tried GLP-1s? It's got to be more than 50%. Then that's a lot of potentially depressed people out there.
That's some 4D chess. See, first you take them off their antidepressant, then you give them all peptides like GLP-1s, make them depressed again, which makes them have to go back on
psychedelics.
It's a new pharmaceutical cascade. Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast, where we give you tools to develop a balanced approach for health. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette.
And I'm James O'Hara, nurse practitioner. And today's episode is the Ozempic epidemic. And Kyle, this is a phrase that you coined, probably been over a year ago at this point. Maybe 2 years ago, you coined the term Ozempic.
Correct. GLP-1s like Ozempic, which is semaglutide, and Mounjaro, which is tirzepatide, are some of my favorite medications. Actually, they're my second favorite medication after hormone replacement therapy. But even things you like HRT and GLP-1s, do have side effects. Even though some people might say peptides and psychedelics and stem cells and exosomes have literally zero side effects, so we should just have all of them available over the counter, which actually they are. You can type in tirzepatide, semaglutide, peptide website, and you can go just buy this right now.
Yeah, but there's a little asterisk that says for research purposes only. So I'm sure that everyone reads that. And other than a couple of lab rats, there's really no one that's doing this, right?
That is actually not true. There is thousands, probably more than a million people, given that half of Americans say they've tried a GLP-1. Half of Americans have not gotten a prescription for Ozempic or Mounjaro or Byetta or Bydureon or Saxenda or Victoza or any of the other GLP-1s that have a word salad. But what we do know is most of these people have very similar side effects, besides the biohackers, which actually have more similar physiology to rats.
So that's why they might be more effective for the biohackers compared to the general population, the one percenters, if you will.
Correct. Like Huberman says, there's five types of people. And one of the main types is just show me the rat studies. And if it looks good there, I'm good to go.
Good enough for me.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear from two real world patients, not interviews, but case reports. I'll go ahead and read through these. The first case was a 54-year-old man who about 1 month after starting semaglutide experienced a marked decline in energy, motivation, fatigue, difficulty concentrating, and mood disturbances. The close timing of these symptoms onset with the initiation of semaglutide and their significant improvement within 11 days of discontinuing the medication underscores a potential causal relationship between semaglutide and the rapid onset of depressive symptoms. Another case, a 40-year-old woman with a history of depression, that's important.
It is.
Reported worsening mood symptoms, including fatigue, cognitive slowing, and suicidal thoughts, approximately 2 months after beginning semaglutide for diabetes management. Her condition showed improvement within 2 weeks of cessation of the medication. So these are two case reports that were published that really seem to imply a causal role of semaglutide in these cases of depression, but there are literally dozens of reasons that this could have happened. You know, we don't necessarily know other things about their lives, whether they were too calorie restricted, whether they were using food as a coping mechanism. There's a lot of things that we'll talk about in a little bit more detailed fashion to get to the idea of, like, is it a GLP-1 specific effect or not?
Yes, and props to the healthcare providers that in this situation considered removing a medication rather than adding ketamine or adding psilocybin or whatever other depression, suicidality treatment is in vogue at the time, adding MDMA. They just needed MDMA.
I've literally heard healthcare providers claim that everyone just needs MDMA.
Yeah.
Just do it.
They do. Anyways, in all seriousness, good job not starting the pharmaceutical cascade. But at the same time, one of these patients was diabetic. So presumably that's a pretty significant benefit that she could have over time. It's important to not just have a potential causal link, but to know what mechanism is this. Can it be attenuated by eating more fat or eating more calories or dose attenuation, et cetera? So we do have some odds ratios when you can look at various GLP-1s and basically the risk compared to normal for different outcomes.
Yeah. So if I'm looking at these hazard ratios here, it's very interesting to me to see sort of a stepwise and dose-wise and potency-wise increase in depression, anxiety, and suicidal ideation and attempts. It's like each time you use a more potent drug, of course, Victoza and Saxenda are the same medication. Saxenda is dosed higher. Ozempic and Wegovy, same medication. Wegovy is dosed higher. And that's where you see an uptick in just the rate of any psychiatric condition. So there does seem to be a pattern there. These are tight confidence intervals. So people that are looking at this at home, you know, if you saw a confidence interval that was from 0.5 to 7.0, you're probably less confident about that. But with these, you can see the numbers are in a pretty tight range, which makes you think these are probably legitimate in a large number of patients. If you look, this is, what does that have to be, close to 200,000 patients? 150,000 patients, something like that?
Yeah, it's a very large sample size. So we have our case study. We have our confidence interval from, you know, tens or even hundreds of thousands of patients. So we know that this link is here. So we should figure out what is happening, how can we prevent it, and then what can you do? Like, what's the alternatives? Do people that lose weight with no medications have these same? But, you know, if you just put people on a very low calorie diet and they're very strict with losing weight, but they don't exercise at all, or are they on other pharmacotherapy options for obesity that are not GLP-1s? And we have some data that looks at this. And we also have some data that looks at drug reactions compared to other medications.
Well, what you made me just think of when you said, you know, if you just make people lose a lot of weight, and not exercise. What about the case where someone loses a lot of weight and they're still exercising? I mean, you have the sort of cases of bodybuilders in prep where their mood will become very depressed despite exercise.
Yeah.
You have the Minnesota starvation experiment where those people lost about 25% of their body weight, starting from a healthy BMI, but they were also very physically active. And that unmasked a lot of psychiatric conditions.
But you have to both exercise and touch grass, do your grounding and sun in order to...
I thought they were chopping wood, like the Minnesota. That's what's always what I experienced.
Barefoot?
Like these people were there's their problem.
There it was.
They weren't wearing their grounding shoes.
Yeah. So people can take away, if you're going to exercise as an antidepressant, an anxiolytic, make sure to do so barefoot, especially if you're chopping wood.
But anyway, the last chart we showed was from the brand new Nature paper, which to me is actually better evidence than some of the things that have come out earlier this year. There was the World Health Organization concern, which when you look at it with semaglutide, it was based on sort of like 7 patients that had reported, I think, suicidal ideation. That was more than that, but 7 patients that had a suicide attempt was sort of the threshold there. So people should report these things when they're happening. That's how we get post-marketing surveillance, which is sort of phase 4 of your drug trials, because we don't know everything about them when they come out, especially because exclusion criteria are commonly used. I think this is a great example. In the early studies for weight loss, they specifically excluded patients who had a history of psychiatric conditions, like whether it's insomnia or anxiety or depression. A lot of times those patients are excluded from the trials, and then you may see new effects unmasked in the general population. So this was the paper, or a chart from the paper earlier this year, where there was this sort of disproportionate increase in mental health pathology associated with the two different GLP-1s. The only thing that I think was used as a comparison was perhaps orlistat, which one interesting note for myself reading through this was that orlistat was actually associated with less nervousness than liraglutide. But if I was taking orlistat, I'd be pretty nervous because it has a well-known side effect of diarrhea.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't be nervous about being constipated.
That's true.
Yeah. Good data here, though. And again, as you compare semaglutide and liraglutide, which is Victoza Saxenda, which is also generic now, then yes, you do see kind of that, not dose-despondent, the dose-dependent response, but strength of medication-dependent response. So again, it does appear that there is a pretty strong link, but when we dig into this and try to incorporate other studies, because of course, when we saw this Nature study come out, what, less than a week ago, we immediately thought Ozempic, this is part of, and again, all Ozempic means is the side effect profile of GLP-1s. Every single medication and supplement, even creatine, has a side effect profile. So when you talk with your healthcare provider or your, you know, chakra guru, whatever, whether it's a chiropractor or an MD or an NP or, you know, a gym bro that you're getting advice for on peptides and buying their, you know, redacted.com peptide from them, they should be able to explain the pharmacology of it and the benefits and the risk, given that they're essentially practicing medicine when they do this. So, you know, most, I would argue that most Americans would actually benefit from a discussion about potentially starting a GLP-1 if they can't improve their obesity and overweight metabolic syndrome without lifestyle changes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable position. It sounds kind of crazy when you first hear it, but if you look at a little bit over half, I think we just hit, Americans being diabetic or pre-diabetic, they stand to benefit a lot in terms of metabolic health by considering a GLP-1 after lifestyle and diet. And realistically, most people have tried some sort of lifestyle change or tried some sort of diet. It doesn't mean that they have stuck to it consistently.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of what is the harm of doing nothing versus the harm of having a discussion about GLP-1,
and that's really where that it could be.
Yeah, that's where that conversation happens. And maybe this is a good point of, you know, seeing these hazard ratios. You know, what if you were able to do a test dose of a patient? Like if I wanted to start someone on a microdose of semaglutide, I can't send a prescription to CVS for them to do that.
Correct.
I can now with the Lilly product, direct to consumer. They can drop a smaller dose.
That is very nice. Yep, the vials.
Yep. Yeah. But it does make a case for patients who may have a narrow therapeutic index or be more sensitive to something, being able to microdose with compounded forms, I think it's a reasonable discussion to have.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Drake meme where, you know, you say medication, full dose, pharmaceutical company, big pharma, no, don't do that for 50% of people. Microdose, peptide therapy, you know, compounded
ketamine,
compounded microdose psychedelic peptide exosome stem cell therapy, and very excited. We should be injecting every man, woman, and child with all these things, but it's the exact same compound with the same pharmacologic effect.
Yeah.
It's just the emotional response to it is different. And that's part of the reason why it's so important to have rock solid physician patient rapport or a healthcare practitioner patient rapport, because regardless of what it is, then you should have good understanding and actually trust each other. It goes both ways.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, a lot of times it is harm reduction. You know, there's certain lifestyle choices that we're all going to make that aren't the optimal choice for every situation. So it's a discussion about how can I minimize the impact of, you know, maybe I'm not going to get enough sleep for a while, or maybe I'm
That's
not going
right
to be able
now.
To exercise as much, or yeah. Maybe I decide that, hey, I'm someone who's going to be using opiates and, you know, we're not going to turn that person away and say, well, no, you're just going to have no care now.
Maybe using anabolic steroids.
Yeah.
Maybe they're these professional are all, strongman competitor.
Yeah. Yeah. Underserved populations, really. Yeah.
CrossFitters. Yeah. That's only partly kidding. Yeah, but in all seriousness, there is data that says otherwise. So whenever we see a big paper like the Nature paper, we look around and sometimes we find things that we expect and sometimes we find things that we don't expect. So for those who don't know, PHQ-9 scores is basically a depression test / depression screening score. A lot of times you go into the doctor's office, you use something called a PHQ-2, and it's basically just two questions. And then if one of those questions is quote unquote positive, then a lot of times they'll do a PHQ-9.
Yeah, and maybe our media person can sort of flash that up on the left-hand side of the screen there so people can see what are these questions, what do they mean. But these are from the early Wegovy trials with semaglutide. And you can see that initially at 0 weeks to 20 weeks, both groups actually get slightly more depressed, you could argue. It's really a small amount, and it's not what you would call like clinically significant depression. But then if I'm sort of painting a picture of what I'm looking at here, it looks like, oh, at 20 weeks, people on semaglutide start to see big changes in their body weight. The drug company is paying for their medication. They're losing weight. Life is good. And also by 20 weeks, the people in the placebo group, maybe they're realizing that they're in the placebo group, or they're thinking, oh, this drug is another dud. It's not working for me. I'm not losing weight.
So maybe potentially there's not actually significantly more major depressive disorder, or maybe it's uncovering something else because they're not self-medicating with food as much, or perhaps it has to do with something else in the limbic system, which is the emotional system of the brain.
Well, and like we said, with these STEP trials, so this is the STEP 1, 2, and 3 trials, anyone with a psychiatric condition or history of was excluded. So those people weren't allowed to enter to these trials. So that may be why you see these low baseline PHQ-9.
They're eliminating confounding variables. And you do see that many years. So you can see, you know, over 100 weeks that in the STEP 5 trial, that's 2 years after. So,
And in this one, you see sort of the opposite. You see generally a little bit less depression. I say that because these aren't clinically significant. Like if you have a PHQ of 2, you're not depressed. But you see less depression in the treatment group compared to the control group, their placebo group.
In the real world, a lot of these depressive thoughts and or self-harm thoughts might come from other factors. For example, financial situation has changed, or even, the regulations have changed and the person that was previously getting the compounded GLP-1 from their med spa or their research chemical GLP-1, again, nobody does that, obviously. Maybe they can't afford it or they can no longer get it because their state shut the website down or whatever the case may be. That also certainly leads to these symptoms because they've tried everything else and then finally the GLP-1 is here, but they still can't even lose the weight, even with the GLP-1.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that these patients are not paying $15,000 a year for the medications when they're enrolled in these trials. So that's a variable that you have to account for. And this isn't
worse
the first
in the real world then.
Yeah, in the real world, this isn't something that we've seen. This isn't the first we've seen of this. I think even earlier this year, there was a paper showing that it looks like about half of people who go off of their GLP-1 are maintaining more than 10% body weight loss.
Yep.
Which is not what you would see in these STEP trials when they do withdraw the therapy and see what happens.
Correct.
So in the real world, I think physicians, NPs, PAs are doing a better job of tapering people off, using bridges. Yep. Maybe some people are switching over to a compounded version, and that's why they're not showing up in the health database that they're taking Wegovy or any of these other brand name medications.
Correct.
But these are, it's not uncommon to see different real world results compared to the clinical trial results. Sometimes better, sometimes worse.
Yeah, exactly. When it comes to the clinical question, what's the mechanism of action of this effect? The anxiousness, the depression, the potential thoughts of self-harm. We love to find the mechanism of action. So, of course, we looked into this and combed through the clinical literature. And found three different papers that didn't actually show what we were looking for, showed kind of the opposite or different. So of course we excluded those and did not mention them. We won't talk about them. And then we went and cherry picked things that did show what we were looking for.
Yeah, actually, I think my comment to you when I was reading these three mechanisms of action here was, well, these don't sound negative. So you're talking about attenuating neuroinflammation, among other things. I mean, yeah, neurogenesis, brain plasticity, those all sound like very good things to have happening in your brain. So what gives?
Yeah, it must have been that these are all preclinical studies and animal studies. Although rats and humans do have a lot of homology. So there's a lot of receptors and brain tissues that are actually quite similar, even in the emotional system of rats and the emotional system of humans. And one thing that it could be is the rats can't read. So they can't read Chris Palmer's book, Brain Energy. So they don't know to eliminate carbohydrates in order to improve those symptoms.
But don't rats get depressed on a high-fat diet?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. So basically, rats are being fed low-fat diets, and they're not eating a lot of fat, and they're on GLP-1s, and they're anxious. If you gave the rats more fat and presumably less carbohydrate, you would figure that that would attenuate and improve their response, and it did not.
Yeah, which is a bit unusual. I think the closest we can find to a, you know, true mechanism of action here is that it's altering dopamine homeostasis in the brain. So that's sort of a very vague answer, but there's not a precise way to say exactly how that's happening. But we know that it seems like some people are having less cravings for tobacco products, nicotine, alcohol. Even sex. There's been reports of decreased libido with GLP-1s. So it is changing something relating to dopamine homeostasis.
Yes.
And perhaps it's a bit like taking a reverse dopamine reuptake inhibitor. So let's say you were going to take some bupropion. It's typically going to increase libido, elevate mood a little bit, elevate motivation a little bit. Maybe this is doing the opposite. Although it's not a perfect analogy because bupropion tends to have a little bit of an appetite suppressant effect too.
Yeah, so that's why we start everyone on both the GLP-1 and the bupropion at the same time.
Yeah, you create the problem and then you create the cure.
Yeah, in all seriousness, this is very interesting, and we'll post three of the proposed mechanisms of action, but of course, all of these have to do with dopaminergic signaling and general neuroinflammation, in which you would think that at least in the long run, someone not having obesity is going to be great from a neuroinflammatory standpoint and an energy availability standpoint. Chris Palmer's book is a great read. Certainly don't think that everybody should do exactly what that book says can be possible. And neither Dr. Palmer would also not say that. It's just one of the many metabolic therapies, which people always forget about metabolic therapies. They're much harder to prescribe, I guess, but they're not impossible to prescribe with enough time. But that being said, it's important to keep these things in mind, because if you have a certain history, then you can know to look for it. So you can have that discussion with your healthcare provider before it becomes a significant issue.
Yeah, I think that's an important takeaway, the last thing you said there. If I just wanted to put together a thought experiment, we have the triple agonist retatrutide on the horizon. It's probably going to be approved, I assume. And it's going to create more potent weight loss. I am interested to see if the same risk is present with tirzepatide, because it has a weaker GLP-1 component. So if it's GLP-1 unique, perhaps that's a safer option, although I wouldn't say it's zero risk for depression or zero risk for anxiety, because I think the energy intake does play a role there. Mm-hmm. But I would almost think that retatrutide or more potent agents like that would need to be reserved for a refractory case. It's like, you would probably want to start with something that's only going to net about 10% body weight loss.
Yeah.
And then you graduate them to a more potent agent. And then you graduate them to a more potent agent. So it's going to require more careful management to reduce that. Because if you have somebody lose 30+% of their body weight in a year, I will not be surprised at all if they're reporting fatigue and brain fog and a lack of energy and a depressed mood, because that's just such a severe energy restriction.
Yeah, generally the slower the better. And that's not even mentioning the glucagon component and the changes in growth hormones secondary to glucagon and the tumorigenic risk. So some good takeaways from this is, one, think about the dose and think about if this, if you can achieve success in other ways, because presumably you're taking this for metabolic benefit and not purely aesthetic benefit. As always, emphasize your pillars of health, your exercise. Yes, get outside. You know, we're not completely joking when we talk about grounding and touching grass and whatnot. It is good to get outside and be in nature. There's proven benefits to being around greenery and shrubs and trees, et cetera, and locking your diet. So even though there might be some conflicting data between the animal studies and the human studies, and yes, maybe the biohackers have more similar physiology to rats, so maybe they just do better on these things. but it is important to consider what your individual nutrition goals are, macronutrient-wise and micronutrient-wise.
Yeah, and I just feel bad for our media team. They're going to have a busy one with this, with the sarcasm detector. So maybe if you're watching this, you can help them out in the comments. And if they missed any instances where we're sarcastic and we have a twinkle in our eye, then let us know in the comments which ones they missed, and we'll get those corrected.
Yeah. As always, thank you for staying with us in this podcast, not a Just the Basics podcast, maybe we talk just above the level of the average person and just miss everyone. But we do appreciate comments, as you mentioned. And also, as always, thank you for your time, and may God bless you with health and happiness.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.